And good afternoon, Tracy Morgan with your extended news at noon. On the phone with me is Brian Swistock, and he's with the Penn State Extension. And the reason I kind of pause is because I'm actually excited to talk about this. It's concerning dogs, your pets, and the algae that you may see on lakes and waterways. And I thought it was a very good topic to talk about. I'm a dog lover. Yeah, I've been out fishing with my kids, and you see the algae, and I thought, I don't know the difference. I don't know what I'm looking at. So I have him on the phone with me. Brian, I appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. Thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And you're a Senior Water Resources Extension Associate with Penn State Extension. Explain what that is first before we get into the meat of our topic.
Well, I basically do education and outreach on all sorts of different water topics all across the state, basically taking the information we learn at the university and extending it out to the public through education.
Do you do surface or do you do underwater, or is that all-encompassing?
It's pretty much all-encompassing. So we deal a lot with people with private wells and springs and ponds and lakes and stream management. So anything that's water-related, we deal with it.
Now, when I introduced this, I said lakes and waterways. Do you see algae and algae blooms on waterways that are in motion, like streams and rivers, or do you just see them on lakes and standing water?
Well, they can grow in any water, whether it's moving or not, but definitely ponds and lakes and more stagnant water is where you're going to see more algae growing for sure.
So you have to explain to me, please, in simple terms, what are algae blooms? What do you mean by a bloom?
Well, a bloom is just a term for a rapid growth of algae, and these growths can occur under the right conditions where you get warm weather, stagnant weather, and lots of nutrients in the water. And the algae will just explode in growth literally overnight. And so they use the word bloom to describe this explosive growth where you won't see much of anything, and then all of a sudden you'll see a whole lot of algae in the water.
When you see the whole lot of algae in the water, are you talking about overnight, 24 hours, or do you see it within a week? Because you're talking about a few months' worth of hot, dry weather.
Yeah, it's normally over a week or two that you'll start to see it develop pretty quickly. There are cases where it can happen overnight, but it's more likely you would start to see it develop and then over the period of a week or two really become very large growth.
Now, I know we wanted to talk about keeping dogs and other animals safe from toxic algae blooms. Is there anything in your vocabulary that's non-toxic when you're talking about algae?
Oh, yes. In fact, most algae are non-toxic, and that's one of the confusions is that people will see algae in a pond or lake and think that it's definitely a toxic algae, and that's certainly not true. Most algae that grow don't have any toxins associated with them. They may aesthetically be not very nice to look at in the pond, but they're not going to cause any problems for animals. But there are these small percentages of algae that can produce toxins under the right conditions, and those are the ones we're really concerned about for animals.
And I'm going to ask you how we identify the non-toxic versus toxic, but first explain to us what is involved with toxic algae blooms. What are you looking at? What's the toxins in there?
Well, there's dozens of different toxins that different species of algae can produce, and they have different effects, and they can affect humans as well as animals. We're mainly talking about animals here, but keep in mind they can affect humans as well that might be swimming in the water or drinking the water. A lot of the toxins are neurotoxins, so they affect your nervous system or the animal's nervous system, so they'll cause them to stagger or have convulsions. And there's a variety of other toxins that can have pretty devastating health effects that have different effects on the body.
Devastating as we can reverse those conditions, or devastating as in conditions worsen and lead to death?
Well, they can lead to death, certainly, yes. You can reverse some of these things if you catch them in time. The problem is the toxins are fairly fast-acting, so you do have to recognize the problem. Hopefully, you can prevent the problem by keeping the animal away from the water, but if they are exposed, if you do take quick action, you can limit the effect it's going to have.
Now, did you focus on keeping dogs safe from toxic algae blooms in this conversation? And by the way, folks, if you're listening to us, Penn State Extension is going to have a webinar on this on July 23rd at 7 p.m. We'll talk about how you get connected with that in just a moment. But are dogs most prevalent to be in connection with this algae? Because cats, I don't see jumping in the water. Do you see many other pets that are affected by the toxic algae?
Not so much pets, other domestic animals, though, like livestock that are using ponds for drinking water, so dairy cows, beef cows, horses, goats, you know, anything that's out in pastures and has a pond that they can get water from, that's also a concern. And then wildlife as well. In fact, the very first case of a harmful algal bloom that I ever saw in Pennsylvania about 30 years ago involved a flock of Canada geese that had been killed by toxins from a harmful algal bloom.
So if you own a lake, if you own a pond, how do you take care of it? Do you have to drag it? Do you have to dredge it? What do you do to keep the algae from becoming toxic?
Well, the biggest thing to prevent algae in general is to keep nutrient levels low. And by nutrients, we mean primarily phosphorus and nitrogen are the two things that algae like to grow on. And those are things that are also common in fertilizers that we use on lawns or that farmers use on fields or that come from septic systems. So they're fairly common in the environment, and they build up in ponds and lakes over time due to runoff from the surrounding land and input from wildlife and humans and all kinds of activities. And so as those nutrients build up, the algae will start to increase, especially as ponds and lakes age. And anything you can do to reduce those levels by minimizing the applications of fertilizers, aerating the water can also help to keep the levels lower. And then you can also use chemicals in the water to try to bind the nutrients so that they're not available for the algae to grow on.
Do you typically see these blooms on the outskirts of the edges, if you will, of the ponds and the lakes? Because there are some ponds and lakes that are quite small, and then there
Yes.
are some that are a little, it takes a little bit more effort to maintain that.
And you do often see them start in the shallower areas, especially in lakes. You'll see them in some of the inlets and some of the little coves and areas that are shallower and more stagnant. That's often where you will see them start in ponds. Again, they often start in the shallow water and kind of progress. These algae are free-floating. They're not attached to anything, so they will spread out even into the deep water over time.
So even if you're going fishing in a pond or a lake or something, you could see some of the toxic algae out floating.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
They can take, on a pond, it's not unusual to see them completely cover a pond, for example.
Interesting. So how do we know what's toxic and what is not?
Well, the only way to know for sure is to look at the species of algae under a microscope, because these are microscopic algae, and you have to look at them under a microscope to identify them. But they do have kind of telltale signs, where when you look at the water, it's going to look very unusual. The water's going to look like it's been painted, or it has an oily sheen to it or a scum layer on top of it. And the colors can differ. It can be greenish, bluish, even white or purple or red. So there's a lot of different colors. The best way I can describe it to people is the water just doesn't look like you would want to get into that water. It looks unusual. It's kind of nature's way of saying, hey, you don't want to be in this water. It just doesn't look good. And so that's when you want to keep animals away, when you see these kind of floating scum layers, and it almost looks like the water has been painted different colors.
And I'm glad you described it that way, because I don't have a microscope at my house. I'd have to call you, Brian.
Right.
Hey, Brian, can you look at this for me, right?
Yeah, a few people have microscopes.
Right,
so it's really just visually looking at the water, and if it just doesn't look like water that you would want to swim in, and it's a good idea to keep your animals out of it.
And even if a dog jumps in the water or the kids are playing in the water, is it just good just to rinse off very quickly?
Yeah, ideally if the animal is in the water or kids are in the water, when they get out, rinse them off with a different source of water if possible. If you don't have a different source of water, towel dry them as much as you possibly can until you can get them to a place where you can rinse them off.
And again, I just want to point out, you mentioned that algae could be ingested, so that's a dangerous point there. So just stay away from the toxic algae if you see it. But let me ask you, does this only happen during the summer months? Are we talking just July, August, September? Does this go into October?
It can go into October, but it is primarily a mid to late summer issue. So we typically see it starting about now in mid-July. And it does tend to follow periods of hot, dry weather, which we've just been getting now. So we're kind of expecting to see harmful algal blooms appear here pretty quickly. And it'll extend for many weeks depending on weather conditions. And we've seen it go into well into September, and during warm falls, it'll even go into October, usually until we get a really cool spell and the first frost, we have the possibility of the harmful algal blooms continuing.
Well, Brian, I asked you, how do you take care of these locations if they're manageable for you to take care of? But what happens when we get to October? Does this algae dissipate? Is it eaten by fish? Does it just go away? Do you have to drag it? How does the algae disappear?
Well, it'll die off due to the cold water temperatures.
Ah,
the water
okay.
temperature does play a big role in this, and as the water cools down, the algae will die off. They're still going to be there in some level, and in fact, that's true of these harmful algal bloom species. They're not new. They've been around for a long, long time. It's just that we're seeing them more frequently now, and there could be a variety of reasons for that. But they need to have that warm water, and as soon as the water starts to cool down, they'll start to dissipate.
Is there any wildlife or fish? The ecosystem, does it benefit from this algae, or is the ecosystem hurt because of the toxic algae?
Yeah, these particular algae really don't have any benefit to the ecosystem. Other types of algae do provide a food source for small fish and for insects and other things in the pond or lake. But the harmful algal bloom species, which we commonly refer to as blue-green algae or cyanobacteria, and they're not called blue-green because that's the color of them. That's a different issue.
Okay.
But they really don't have any benefit. They're not readily eaten by anything in the pond, which is another reason that they can bloom so effectively. And they really only have negative effects on the ecosystem. They can cause fish kills, the death of wildlife, in addition to the effects on humans and domestic animals.
And is there any way to control it? Because if you're talking about dry conditions and hot conditions, does it get out of hand sometimes?
Absolutely, and there's a variety of issues there. When it truly does bloom, the best thing you can do is just keep animals and humans away from the water, let it run its course, and then focus on preventing it in the future. And prevention would involve, again, the nutrient control we talked about, maybe adding aeration if you have a pond where you can do that effectively, but also then attacking it with algicides when you first see the bloom starting and not waiting until it becomes a full-fledged bloom. Because once you get a lot of algae present and you start to treat it with algicides, there are risks associated with that where you will release all the toxins at one time, and also you run the danger of losing a lot of oxygen in the water and killing a lot of fish and aquatic life. So the best thing to do if you see the bloom, just avoid things for now, but then start thinking about for next year, what can I do to try to prevent this from happening again?
Does Lake Arthur get blooms at all? I remember a couple of years ago, or was it just a year ago, that Lake Erie had a big problem with blooms.
Yes. Lake Erie had very well publicized blooms that affected drinking water supplies in Ohio, and that's where a lot of people learned about harmful algal blooms. And a lot of lakes and ponds in Pennsylvania do have small blooms in places, or some have very severe blooms. It does very much depend on the weather conditions. You know, a couple of years ago when it was so wet in the summer, we had virtually no blooms occur. But then when you get these dry, hot conditions like we're having now, that's kind of what sets us up for a lot of blooms to occur.
So would you say we're being set up, as you just mentioned, or are we having a problem now?
Well, I have had a few calls this week, which is just beginning. Had some people send me some pictures that do look like harmful algal blooms. So it does appear as though they're just starting, and right about now is when we typically do see them start. But we do have just ideal weather conditions for algal blooms to really start to grow now here in July.
So you're saying we need cooler water temperatures, cooler temperatures, not just rain?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, cool and wet weather is really ideal because it really doesn't allow the algae to grow abundantly. And the warm, dry weather where you get really stagnant conditions, that's where it really starts to take off.
Because we're all hoping for rain just so we can mow our yards again, but I guess we're not looking for rain for the algae. But okay, let me ask you this then. If we're talking about places like Moraine or Lake Erie or the larger locations, are we able to still go in and swim at the designated areas even if there's an algae bloom elsewhere on that lake or pond? Is that possible? Or once there's toxic algae, does it filtrate through the whole entire area?
Well, usually on a larger lake, it can be pretty confined to an area, and that's where testing for the toxins can become important. And in a lot of the public waterways like that, they will be tested frequently for toxins, and they will close beaches if they get toxin levels that are high enough to be problematic. So, yeah, it's not necessary that you have to close an entire lake, for example, if you have a bloom in certain areas, especially on the really large lakes. Ponds, though, you know, once you have a bloom in a pond, which is defined really as 5 acres or less in size, that gets kind of tough. Once you've had a bloom there, you probably should stay out of the entire pond.
Again, Penn State Extension is going to be having a webinar on this where, of course, folks can find out a lot more information than we have time to be able to discuss. This will be July 23rd at 7 p.m. How do people get registered? Do you suggest that they do get pre-registered, or is this a Zoom-like call that they can just jump on board?
Yeah, you do have to become pre-registered, or you do have to pre-register for these. And the one way you can do it online is just to go to the Extension website, which is extension.psu.edu, and just search on there for harmful algal blooms and dogs, and you can find it there. That's probably the easiest way that most people like to register.
And can you talk about Penn State Extension just for a moment? I know we talk to you often and people hear the name, but I'm not sure if they fully understand what the Penn State Extension is all about.
Well, Extension is the land-grant part of Penn State University. Every state has a land-grant institution, and it's basically our function to take all of the things that are learned in the university environment, whether here in Pennsylvania or other places, and extend that to the public. So just like we teach students here on campus, it's also our job to teach the public about what we're learning through research. And that's where the word extension comes from, extending the information that we're learning out to the public. And so the things we're talking about with harmful algal blooms, we've done research over the last several years on those blooms here in Pennsylvania. And part of what we'll show in the webinar is some of the things we've learned about these blooms through our research here in Pennsylvania.
Brian, I only have a question or two left for you, and one I like to ask a lot of people the same question because I find it fascinating on what people do for a living and their focus in life, because I think we all focus well on certain things in life, and you have such a skill. Tell me the love of your job. Why do you love doing what you do?
Well, I like helping people solve problems, basically, and so that's really what Extension does. We help people solve water problems in my case. So people call me with problems with their well or their spring or their stream or their pond, whatever it might be. And I enjoy helping them work through that problem and find a solution to it. And that's really what is rewarding to me personally.
Do you handle small ponds? And I ask that because I think a lot of people will get into small ponds and they don't really know what's all involved. Or they may buy land where they have a larger pond on it and they don't realize what's involved. Do you handle cases like that for people?
Yeah, most of what we do is on earthen ponds. So we make a distinction between kind of the small backyard landscape pond, which they're usually plastic lined. They're maybe measured in gallons and they're very small and they have koi or goldfish. And that's really more of like an aquarium management. We don't do a lot with those particular types of ponds. But we do deal regularly with people that have sort of the quarter-acre to 5-acre pond or even larger lakes and help them work through management of those, whether it's algae blooms or leaks or nuisance wildlife, lots of different things, or just fishing and they want to catch bigger bass in the pond. We try to help with all those different questions.
Brian Swistock with us, and I just want to say thank you again for your time as Senior Water Resource Extension Associate with Penn State Extension, and Penn State Extension is having a webinar slated for July 23rd at 7 p.m., and it's all about keeping your dogs and other animals safe from toxic algae blooms, and you can learn more about what we talked about today and trying to figure out what is a bloom. I know you're the expert, Brian, but it's interesting to us to learn the difference between what's toxic and what's not, and to even understand that there is toxic and non-toxic. So that'll be July 23rd. You need to get registered for this. It'll be extension.psu.edu, and you can start from there and then look for protecting dogs and animals from harmful algae blooms. Brian, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your time that you spent with us, and any final thoughts you want to share with us?
I think the one most common question we get from people are about the other types of algae blooms that are filamentous algae. That's the stuff you can actually pick up, and that's completely harmless. So we do get that question a lot. That algae is a lot more common, occurs in the vast majority of ponds, and we're not talking about the algae that you can actually pick up the long strands of. The algae we're worried about, again, causes these foams and coatings on the water, and when you go to pick it up, there's nothing there. It just dissipates in your hand. So that's an important distinction to make. We don't want people to get too worried about a lot of these real common algae that you can pick up and remove from the pond.
Thank you for that distinction. I appreciate that. And then when you pick it up, wash your hand off, right?
That's right.
Keep clean. Keep it. There you go. Or use a glove. I love it. All right, Brian, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.